The Hannah Gray Mayor of Bromley podcast. Championing small businesses. Hannah Gray has been serving the community as a local government councillor for several years. She was nominated to be the 2020-2021 Mayor of the London Borough of Bromley at the height of the COVID pandemic in March 2020. Hannah has for many years been known as one of South London's most prolific small and medium enterprise networkers. Before becoming Mayor, Hannah was Bromley's business champion, promoting and helping entrepreneurs achieve their business ambitions. She's now dedicated to helping promote SMEs, charities, and voluntary organizations to learn from their experiences for the benefit of all.
Well, hello, and welcome back to my podcast. Well, I'm really delighted today. I've got Zeenat Noorani. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. She'll tell me later. And she's the founder. I can hear you giggling in the background. Hopefully that was right. And you're the founder and owner of Vida della Miraposa Coaching for Wellbeing, Mental Health Therapist and Coach. Now, I hope that's a correct introduction. Please correct me if I've not got that right. But I'm so excited to have you on my podcast because we've already met, as we said in our little teaser, when we went to the Lord Harris meeting, arranged by Chandra. Mm-hmm. He's always gets a shout out on these podcasts. I don't know
he
why.
He does. He's like a little man on our shoulder.
He is. He's perfect, isn't he? So we met there, and we also met at Chandra's shop when he was celebrating. I couldn't remember the number of years. I don't know whether it's 20 or 50, but he's been here forever anyway. And we met there again. So I had the pleasure of meeting you, finding out a little bit about you, which I know you're happy to share with us today. So did I get your name right? Is that right?
Madam Mayor, absolutely. And it is a delight to be here. It's amazing how people worry about pronunciation. But yes, you got it perfectly. And you got my company name beautifully as well.
That's great. Don't worry about the Madam Mayor bit. We don't need to worry about that. Hannah is absolutely fine because we just want to be really relaxed and have a good old chat. So I'm pleased I pronounced it correctly. But do tell us, I mean, it's a beautiful name. What's the origin of the name? And also, are you a local girl? Or, tell us a little bit about where you started from.
Okay, the name, as in my name, some people say it's Indian, some people say it's Egyptian. Apparently, it means somebody who brings the light and happiness to the home.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's
a
great start.
I think that's something we'd have to ask my mother if that's true or not. But I'm sure she'll tell us. But yes, I was born in the UK. I left the UK when I was about 4 years old, 5 years old. And we moved as a family to the Middle East, Dubai. And I did all my schooling there. So I grew up in the Middle East.
Wow, that must have been something.
18. Yes. So, life then was very different to what you see and hear about now.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to go to Dubai, but it was only a couple or so years ago. It was an amazing experience. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I wasn't sure I was going to because I wasn't sure of how the culture was going to be with women. But actually, in our hotel and everywhere we went, it was wonderful and we were very well looked after.
Yes.
But growing up there and that time ago, I mean, not very old, but that time ago must have been different because it's changed drastically over the years, hasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, gosh, when I was there, there was probably only about five schools possibly. And, I went to one of the British primary schools and then one of the secondary schools that was there at the time. My secondary school is still one of the top fives in the whole of the UAE. So it's doing really, really well. I'm proud to be part of that, coming from that school, Dubai College. So fantastic school. And it's given me lots of opportunities as well as a person to grow and, to become who I am. I had opportunities to do what I love, and I love sports. So I was very much into sports back then. And, give me a sport and I will just dive right in and do it. However, my passion did lie in ice skating.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
Oh, this is going to be fascinating, this journey that we're going to go with you. So from starting in the UK, going to live in Dubai, going to school in Dubai, having a passion for ice skating And then we're going to find out how on earth you got from there right the way through to this wonderful mindset and life coaching that you're doing now. But ice skating, I mean, when you say you enjoyed it with a passion, did you do it professionally or was it just for a bit of fun?
No, I excuse me. I actually took it up professionally. It's probably not the sort of the career line my parents probably wanted, but I did promise them that I would go to university. So I did go to university first in case anything happened, and I did interior design. Didn't quite enjoy that when I started to work in it, so I kind of sneaked back into the skating profession, and I met somebody who had just actually come from a show, the ones that travel like Disney on Ice, and he got me an audition. So I was like, great, that's it, I'm jetting off. And I came back to the UK, auditioned and got in, and I said, that's it, I'm only gone for 6 months. 6 months later turned into many, many years. But believe me, that had its challenges, ups and downs, mentally, physically, emotionally. But I didn't quite realise then that I was going through all these sort of up, down moments, if that makes sense. I think when you're young and you're free, you just kind of keep going. You've got this resilience that you just keep going and going and trying to reach for more. But you don't realise the effect that certain things are having on you. So, you know, things like having to weigh in every Saturday, making sure that you're not overweight or underweight, or you look pretty enough or you're skinny enough. All these things are kind of behind
pressure.
The scenes of all the glam and glitter that, you know, most people see.
Tremendous pressure. Absolutely. Now, you don't think about that with skaters. Now, I should probably think about that with skaters. But when you think about it with ballerinas, very important that they weigh in and they're beautiful and they're always very well made up, immaculately turned out. Because in my world, years and years and years ago, I was involved in opera singing. So we, as an opera singer, often we'd be alongside ballerinas. So if you went to the Royal Opera House or something like that, not that I sang at the Royal Opera House.
Amazing.
I wasn't that good. I only sang in the back room. But the ballerinas were amazing. But it was a big pressure, their weight, their fitness, and that sort of thing. And when you say ups and downs, it went in my mind because, of course, we've got the ice skating thing on telly at the moment, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
When you say ups and downs, I'm thinking of you falling over on the ice. So I'm hoping that's not the kind of ups and downs you're talking about, although that probably would have been better for you.
I mean, all of that is very painful, and that can affect you mentally as well, depending on the injuries you get. As you know, for example, last week, just on that show, how the celebrities fell and they lost their confidence by just something small when you're first starting out. So it can be quite detrimental to your well-being and the way you see yourself and want to move forward.
Yeah, and I had never thought about the other pressures, the mental pressures of being perfect as a performer, as a person, as beautiful, as the right weight, and all. I've never even thought about that as a skater. So that must have been a tremendous pressure. And so, did you travel around the world a lot? And did they give you any? Did they give you any mental welfare with it? I mean, I love the glamour of it all, and I'm sure it was amazing and exciting. You're obviously very ambitious, and that's all brilliant. But was there any of that kind of well-being? Did they care at all about that?
Do you know, I think growing up, there was never the support that we have now that we have in schools. Even in the job, and we talk about workplace well-being, there's so much more here happening. Still a long way to go, but during my time when I was in the show, there was none of that, absolutely none of it. You just either got on with it, or you might say something to your colleagues, or might flag it up with the performance director. But even then, it was very rare because you had a fear. If you did flag things up, then you're considered that you're not fit for the job, you're weak, and you can't handle it.
Yeah, very scary. Yeah. And, you know, when you relate that to now and work now, people are, I know I'm jumping around here, but people are really suffering because as they're being furloughed or some are made redundant, especially I've seen it with the furlough, people become quite insecure or can do because they're thinking, why me? Why have they furloughed me? Why haven't they furloughed my colleague? Why is it me? Do they want to get rid of me? Are they going to get rid of me? And that they daren't say anything and they daren't express any worries because a bit like your profession when you were skating, they must be fearful of the repercussions of that. And so it's a very, there is a similarity between those two situations. That
there is, and I think a lot, you're absolutely right. And I think a lot also stems down to the way we were brought up, or the values and beliefs that, you know, you shouldn't show your weaknesses. And that's so wrong, actually. You know, don't be vulnerable, because if you're vulnerable, then they're not going to think that you're strong enough to do the job. But actually, when you show your vulnerability, which has taken me years to learn, that you can actually connect on a different level and you actually become human.
Yeah. Yeah. You become stronger. They do say it's the hardest thing to admit you're wrong and say sorry. Not that we're talking about that with the mental health, but when you look at that, a lot of people haven't got the courage to do that. Yeah. And when you do get a completely different reaction from people. But before we get into all of that, we can't help it. That's what we're here to talk about. But what did you do after skating then? What happened next?
My career took me to Spain, where I was there for about 7 years almost. Loved Spain. And I thought I was going to end up there forever. But unfortunately, my skating career ended there because the show closed down and I was kind of settled in a relationship. I had two gorgeous cats and I thought, this is it, you know. Of course, I was going to miss all the traveling. You know, if it hadn't been for my skating, I wouldn't have experienced all the wonderful countries, culture, the people that I've met along the way. It has given me so much growth. So anyone wanting to travel, if you can do that, absolutely. It's definitely a must, because it gives you a whole new insight to your own self-awareness and personal development. I know I've gone off on a tangent again, but
it's okay.
You can't learn that from textbooks.
Yeah, you learn it from people.
You cannot learn it. It's real life experiences.
Yeah.
And those are the things that have made me today. So anyway, fast forwarding back to Spain, I then decided I was kind of hitting that wall that you kind of keep banging against and you can't get over. And so I decided I needed to do something else, and I kind of wanted to be a bit more settled in my life. So I decided to come back to the UK, and that was in 2006. The 31st of June, actually, was when I stepped foot in back in the UK of 2006. And I went back to school, well, university, and I did my teaching degree in primary.
Oh, okay.
I was really, really excited about it. I thought, okay, you know, I still get to be me, do a bit of acting and drawing and being silly, all that kind of artistic stuff. Unfortunately, my career didn't turn out as I expected.
But primary school. So you went into primary school. Did you actually end up teaching in primary school?
Yes.
Wow. I mean,
So I taught up until 2000, sorry, I think it was 2017 I resigned.
Wow. So you had those wonderful little people, the wonderful little minds. And I remember that when my two strapping lads now were sitting cross-legged at primary school in the assembly, and you'd look at all of them there in a row, all in their sort of 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, you know, and think, what are they all going to be? What are they going to turn out to be in this life?
Yeah.
You know, are we going to have amazing actors? Are we going to have amazing scientists? Are we going to have amazing politicians? Are we going to have explorers? What are they all going to be in this world?
Mm.
And you had them in your hands. They were
there. I had them in my hands.
How lovely.
And a lot more.
How lovely. How absolutely lovely. So you did that for quite some time. And
I did, yeah.
Did you enjoy that? Was that another huge learning curve as far as, you know, there's a lovely lady I'm working with at the moment called Alison Delaney, and she, her company's called Little Bird, and it's about realizing your dreams. And she loves to, she's written a book, I think it's Little Chick on the Moon, I think is as close to that name as I can remember at the moment. But she is about young people following their dreams, not having them squashed, always being able to explore. And you must have seen so much of that at primary school. How exciting.
Yes, I mean, you do see that. And, you know, as a teacher, that's all that we want for those children, is to just bloom and flourish and grow. And when they do, it's so rewarding to see that. And I absolutely miss the teaching aspect of it. the seeing them grow and learning from their challenges. But what's disappointing, also say sad, is the fact that there's so much pressure, not just for teachers, but for children. And sometimes that is lost, and children then lose their passion for what they're doing, or their confidence, because it's almost like they've been forced to do something or be something that they don't want to be or do.
Yeah,
that and not fully allowed to grow naturally, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that with the pressure, that can have a detrimental effect, can't it? We do tend to test our children quite a lot.
Yeah.
And that therefore leads to the teachers having to prepare them for the tests to see how they're going to do. And it's a difficult decision, isn't it, to write the curriculum and to make sure that our children are educated at a standard that's the same right the way across the country. But on the other hand, you don't want to squash their fantastic minds.
And, you know, educators do an amazing job. And I know everyone tries to do the best they can, but it's very, very different. I mean, I understand what it's like to be a child who's not top of the class, I was just an average student, but never good enough, if that made sense. And so my growing up was very different. In those days, teachers focused more on the bright ones. But I think sometimes that's where you get lost, and that, when I think about it, and when I went through my therapy, and we'll get to that, this is when lots of things uncovered from the past, because we know that a lot of things that happen now, if we have a breakdown, it's due to possibly experiences or trauma that we may have had in the past.
Yeah, it's not a straightforward single layer thing, is it? There's so many layers to people and why they end up feeling as they're feeling and how they can cope or sometimes can't cope. Something will tip them over the edge. Mm. And we're becoming more and more aware of that now, aren't we?
Yes.
And I think we've still got quite a long way to go, but at least we are aware of it. And the swingometer sometimes goes from one extreme to the other, but I don't think we've gone to an extreme yet. I think we're still trying to find out about it and help people along the way, and people have to be brave enough to talk about it. So you gave up your teaching in 2017, did you say? And why did you do that? Was there a reason, another career you wanted to have, or had you had enough?
Well, it started off that I started training and got my qualification as a coach while I was still teaching, because I felt that would be a wonderful tool to have as an additional to support children and also support my colleagues at work. Because it's important that as teachers, we support each other as well with professional development. But unfortunately, I mean, that was great. All of that was wonderful. And as I said, I love teaching the children. But then so what I focus on right now is predominantly managers, leadership, all of the kind of hierarchy around mental health. And then I filter down. The reason being is because of the experience I had when I was at school, that I wasn't supported by the head teacher, the leadership. Certain things happened, and I was also getting attacked by parents at the same time. I wasn't good enough, and anything I did was wrong. And then children started to feed off that as well. And so my life became very difficult. And I literally, trying to be resilient is another thing. We're resilient and we keep going and keep going. But we have to know what kind of resilience we need. It's got to be the right resilience, not the resilience where you just brush things under the carpet and keep going and not deal with that. It's about finding alternative solutions and routes that fit me. And unfortunately, I mean, it's a long story, but unfortunately, it led me down to a massive breakdown, a burnout, where I was actually panicking. I would get panic attacks, and I took time off work, and I was trying to recuperate. I went through therapy and counseling to get back on my feet. And it was then that a lot of things got uncovered about my past in terms of, you know, the way I saw myself, the confidence, the value for myself as well, which is so important, your worth and value. And it just hit me literally when I decided that I was going to go back. And I, you know, was almost driving up to the school gate, and I was like, do you know, I went into a panic attack. And I was like, do you know what? I can't do this. I can't do this. Anyway, the next day I was like, not doing it. Went home and I wrote my resignation letter because I knew it wasn't for me. I had a mortgage to pay. I was in debt. No savings. And yet I was like, I'd rather, it sounds awful, or maybe it doesn't because it's still a job. I said, I'm ready to clean toilets if that's what it takes, but I'm not going back into teaching.
Yeah. Yeah. So you knew it really hit you, and you really knew. So, and that was all based on the fact that you were being slowly but surely undermined. You weren't getting the support you needed from the structure around you. And that was allowing other things to filter in, and the disrespect from the children and the shouting from the parents, and the system wasn't supporting you. Yeah. And slowly but surely it eroded your confidence.
It did, yes.
in yourself, right through to the core by the sound of it. And then through therapy, you found the reasons, and that's what you must be drawing on that experience now, because helping everybody else.
But, you know, I think also it was my family, like my mom and my sister especially, they said, Zina, you are not yourself. You're constantly agitated. You're angry. You're getting upset about everything. And normally I'm not that type of person. And they said, it's not right. What's going on? And of course, you don't listen to your own family members who are the closest to you. They probably know you well enough, but you just ignore them.
Yes.
But I was changing, and then I looked at myself and I didn't like who I was becoming.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be me again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, many people do hit that point, don't they? Where, as you were describing, it doesn't make a lot of logical sense, where you've got your mortgage, you've got your credit cards, you've got all these things you've got to pay for, and you are just going to give up that job that you do not like, is not doing you any good anymore. And as you say, go and do whatever you need to do. And, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, you can always earn money doing something. Well, we say always. It is difficult for some people to get a job, but there are ways and means of getting jobs eventually, and coaching people into maybe pivoting and doing all those sorts of things. Sorry, if you could hear that, that was my phone going off in the background.
Oh, no, I didn't hear anything. You know, and it just goes to show that, you know, because we talk about well-being in the workplace, and I just kind of want to focus that there are great schools out there. There's great leadership. But sometimes when it does kind of fall into that, something needs to happen and go take place to lift that school up. Because after I left, there was a knock-on effect, and we could see teachers started leaving. A lot of teachers left that school after I did. There were a few that left before, but many left after. But you could see the way the stresses they were under, the pressures.
What a
shame.
They're
all feeling it.
What a shame, because, I mean, I take my hat off to teachers, and I'm sure every other parent in this country that is doing homeschooling suddenly has, as they should have already, a great respect for our teachers. So I know you're not saying anything against the teachers, and that school just needed a bit of a shake up, and sometimes they do, and hopefully it's happened. But for you, it enabled you to face an issue and go on a journey and soul search and therapy yourself. And so you learnt the skills from that and decided to move into therapy. Was it as sort of straightforward as that, to be able to help other people the way you'd been helped?
Yes. No, I, you know, as I was going through it, I was like, you know, I can really resonate with this. And I said, all I want to do is always, you know, always be able to help people. And I did find, you know, growing up as well, a lot of my friends would come to me, or people would share things with me. And I was like, oh, okay, mate, you know what, I'm a good listener. Because, you know, I listen to people, and that's what people need. They don't need someone to tell you what to do. Because, you know, I'm not going to be the expert in everything. But what people do need, if they're struggling, is just someone who will listen to them, be able to take a weight off their shoulder. because by doing so, you gain clarity. And that's what I found, that by talking, I had much clarity. Of course, to help me along the way, and I know it's not for everybody, but I did take medication to balance the chemicals in the brain, which helped me. Some people take it, some people don't. And it's, you know, but it's worth, for me, it's worth talking to your GP about.
Yeah, if you're suffering from depression, if you've really got, what did Churchill used to call it, the black dog? If you really do have something you just can't shake off, then it's always worth talking to your GP. They're not just going to put you on tablets for no reason, but that sometimes it can just a tiny, and it's not like it used to be, is it? The tablets that people have now, you can just take a tiny little amount and that'll just lift the spirit slightly. And then, of course, if you have your therapy or come to someone like yourself where you've got your coaching as well as your well-being, it's all different methods that you must use. And that's really interesting. So how would you assess what somebody needs? What would be the process that someone would go to if they came to you and said, look, I'm just feeling flat. I haven't got the bubble in me anymore. I can't be bothered to get out of bed in the morning. I haven't got a smile on my face. Oh, gosh, what is the matter with me? Where would you go with that?
So firstly, I would listen to all of everything they have to say. And then, we'd kind of talk about, so what is it that they're looking for? So knowing what they're looking for, and also asking them the question is, how ready are they to make their change? Because that is also the main key. If you can express something, but if they're not ready to make that change, you can't help them make that change. It's almost like that saying, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink.
Yeah.
And this is key. So it's about me just constantly asking the right questions, a lot of questioning techniques. I try not to dwell too much in the past. However, though, sometimes we need to. So then it's going back to the core root of their problem. When did it start to happen? What were the triggers? What are their values? What are their belief systems around it? So we do a lot of work, foundation work. Again, it's a bit like building a house. You can't build a house without the foundations. So they have to be ready to go back to the foundations, and we can kind of rip it apart and then rebuild it.
Is that stage quite difficult for people? Even if they are ready and they say, yeah, no, I've had enough of this. I'm not me. I'm not what I want to be. I don't necessarily talk about, you know, improving their natural self, but just they're being their natural self. They're not feeling comfortable in their own skin. But to take a look at it, even if they're ready, I would imagine, and I'm not an expert like you, but I would imagine that can be pretty scary and tricky sometimes.
It is. It's really, really, because, you know, you've got people's lives in your hand, and all you want is for them to blossom, to be happy and successful in their life, whatever they do. It can be tricky. I mean, for me, this is why I have so many tools in my back pocket, because everybody is individual. Everyone is unique. And, you know, one person suffering from anxiety or depression doesn't mean you can always use the same tool or technique with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's so really important.
What kind of tools have you got in your back pocket? It makes it sound really interesting. I wonder,
I've got a hammer.
But what have you got? I mean, is it, I've heard of NLP, I've heard of kinetic shift and hypnosis. I don't know. Are those the kind of things that you use? Do you use those kind of?
Yes. So those are all the tools I use. Mindfulness as well. Like you've mentioned, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, EFT, emotional freedom tapping, hypnosis. You know, all those tools. Of course, again, it's about talking to the clients. What are they ready and prepared for me to use with them? Because sometimes, you know, for example, hypnosis, people have a stigma about hypnosis. They almost think it's like, you know, I'm going to put them under and make them cluck like
magic
a chicken
shows.
And bark like a dog.
Yeah, like the magic shows. Yeah, yeah. But it's not about that, is it? Not at all. I mean, I've never been hypnotized, but I know people have gone under hypnosis treatment. But I know people that have. And the way they've described it, I don't know, you tell me what you think, but the way they've described it is it's more like a meditation. It's more like a calmness and an openness.
Absolutely.
And the stress goes, and then they can start to talk and without fear find out what's going on inside them. I don't know. Is that a good... professional.
Yeah, it is. So basically, you're under a sort of a deep sleep, but actually, you're still awake, to put it in simple terms. So, for example, if the fire alarm was to go off, your innate programming already knows that's a danger. So you will come out of the hypnosis straight away. So you're not stuck in that hypnosis as such. And when you do go under, you can still kind of almost hear what's going on, but you can't kind of do it because you're so focused on yourself and what you're trying to solve. And it was bizarre because when I went through my training, I said to the tutor, you can't hypnotize me. No. I'm gonna hypnotize everybody else, but there's no way you can do me, you know. And he's like, no, I can't. And then within seconds, and my friends got it on video because I didn't believe them, I was gone like that within seconds. And he goes, I just literally flopped. And so they call me the flopper, apparently, because I just throw myself. So they had to catch me because I went into such a deep hypnosis. It was crazy. And I was like, that's not me, is it? I was looking at it on the film.
Oh, I think that was frightening the heebie-jeebs out of me. I don't think I'm brave enough to let go of the control, you know, to allow that to happen. And that says a lot about me, unfortunately.
You've got to let go of the control. That is absolutely key. I mean, I tried once to hypnotize my parents and it was impossible. They just would not let go. They were resisting and resisting. I said, oh, well, you guys are useless. I'm going to go find somebody who wants to be hypnotized.
Probably you're a bit too close to them anyway.
Probably. They thought, I'm not going to spill my secrets.
Yeah. As you wouldn't listen to them, they weren't about to listen to you. It's one of those things, isn't it? Mutual respect, disrespect. Yeah. No, it's a good thing. So with all those tools in your back pocket, and I love that term, what sort of top tips have you got for people out there at the moment, really, you know, suffering a little with their insecurities, with their depression? Because, you know, I was chatting with someone earlier on today and someone said to me, how are you, Hannah? How's the mayoralty? How's it all going? And I said, you know what? Most of the time it's great. I'm fighting a fight here because it's made the year rather tricky and difficult, but it's also made it an amazing year. And I'm not going to go on about me because we want to talk to you. But nevertheless,
No,
I'll go into therapy with you. We'll record it. But nevertheless, I still get days where it's just, oh, really? Oh, gosh, I just haven't got the energy for it. So, you know, knowing that and realising that, and everyone gets the odd off day here and there, no matter how we try to be resilient, as you were saying earlier, we get off days. And what would you say? What is your... Have you got an overall top tip or one or two tips that you would...
You know what? I would say it's okay to not feel okay. And we hear that all the time. And it's so important that we remind ourselves that if we're not feeling great, then it's all right to step back a little bit. And it's okay to tell someone, you know what, I'm not feeling my best today, but I'm still here and we'll still do what we have to do, or let's still have this meeting or the conversation. And if you're really not feeling great, reschedule. It's not the end of the world. If it's life and death, then obviously you're going to do it. But if it's not and it can be rescheduled, then why not? And if you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
So be kind to yourself. That is so important. And, you know, as I said, on one of my affirmations that I put out, and I'm going to read it, I said, you know, my mind and my body are precious. I have only one I respect and I treat myself as I should. Now, if you don't have your mind, you don't have your physical, emotional health, how are you going to move forward?
That gave me goosebumps. Honestly, I've got goosebumps. But it's so true. It's so true. Yeah. And you hear it, you know, I'm lucky enough and privileged enough to be a mum. And on first child, people were saying, look after yourself as well. Don't forget to look after you. Because if you're not in a good place, you can't look after your child. Mm. But people are so busy helping each other, sometimes they're forgetting that they have one body, they have one mind, and they need to look after themselves. I mean, our children are getting a bit of a rough time of it at the moment.
Yes,
I know it sounds as if we're, you know, anti-school in a way, but we're not at all. I'm hugely, hugely admiring of what goes on. But the children are having a bit of a tough time because they don't know whether they're going to school, not going to school. They're having to learn from home. They have to learn a different skill set from the concentration and self-discipline. And they're getting a bit depressed. Some of them are really getting a bit depressed. And the teenagers that can't see their friends who are actually someone they can talk to on an equal, equal level, peer to peer, they're feeling a bit rough. So what would we say to them? I mean, it's okay not to be okay, I think, is a good thing. I do say that to my boys.
Absolutely. You know, and just remember, you know, we're lucky that we have all this technology to keep in touch and stay connected.
Yeah.
And just to know that, you know, we are going to come out of this. There is light at the end of the tunnel. There will be. It may not be going at the speed we want it to, but again, taking small steps and appreciating each day that you get up and you do something, you need to say thank you for that, that you've done that. Reward yourself. Be grateful that you've done that. Even if it's simple as, you know, because some people struggle to get up and get dressed in the morning. But if you can manage to just do that, then that, and that's wonderful. That's amazing.
Yeah, big tick. Say, well done, me.
Yeah, well done, me. Absolutely. And, you know, this is a funny one, but, you know, limit the amount of technology we use, the digital devices. Try and control that to some extent, or have more breaks in between. And it's funny because I was talking to somebody recently about this, and we talk about, you know, we mentioned children, their mental health and well-being, reducing the devices of how much they use it.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, we're suddenly now asking them to be on Zoom, online learning from like 8, 9 o'clock in the morning all the way till 3, 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
I mean, where is the balance in that? It doesn't, you know, one minute we're telling them, so of course they're confused. One minute you tell them, don't use so much technology. The next minute they have to be focused on it. And it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, as adults, we struggle. We get, what's that, Zoom fatigue?
Yeah,
we do.
They're
definitely getting it.
Oh, definitely Zoom fatigue. And an optician in one of the networking groups I'm a member of was saying that some of the kids are really, their eyes are really suffering at the moment. And it was quite funny today you mentioned that, because as I often mention my boys, and we do the it's okay not to be okay. And we do the mum, don't talk to me at the moment. I'm hungry and I'm tired and I'm not going to be the kind of person I should be towards you. So just please give me some space. And that's, I always respect that. And they go and sit in their bedroom. But my eldest today, talking about this, okay, so I'm standing in the kitchen. He comes downstairs. He doesn't say anything at all. He just smiles and nods. And I think, okay, you know how you can tell. Okay. And he goes out in the garden in a T-shirt. I mean, it wasn't that cold, but it's still chilly. In a T-shirt, he walks down the soggy garden, down round the shed, back again, up and down. I thought, what on earth is going on with him? What is the matter? He comes back in. I said, darling, are you all right? Is everything okay? He said, yep, I'm really fed up with that computer, so I'm just getting a breath of fresh air. Thought, how good is that? How sensible is that? He said, right, I think I'm ready to tackle it again. I'm off. And upstairs he goes. And I thought, he's only 20, he's going to be 21 soon. But I thought, gosh, that's quite a wise thing to do, isn't it? And we need
that
to do it. We all need to take time out, don't we?
Yeah.
You're so right.
And I think it's important, especially for the young generation now, you know, for children, young people, to start really looking at their own self-awareness because of what we're going through right now more than ever. I mean, I know it's slowly happening, but again, like we said, I don't think it's going fast enough, and we have to start with ourselves. And if these children and young people learn how to manage their emotions, their thinking patterns, their negative thinking from an early age on, it's going to really support them as they get older and face more challenges. Because we know what it's like being an adult. We're suddenly bombarded with so many responsibilities.
Yeah, and we still haven't got it sussed, have we, really? I mean, we still have days when it's okay not to be okay. And you have to say it, don't you? You have to admit it. I like that phrase. I'm going to be using that a lot. I like that a lot. It's okay not to be okay. Yeah.
Yes.
That's going to be my mantra. Oh, Oh, anyway, I've really loved this chat. You know, I can't believe that we've this is recording has gone on as long as it has, because I've just enjoyed it so much.
But I've
got a couple of little questions, little curveballs. I throw a little couple of things in. And I ask other people, so I've got to ask you, even though I'm wound up in all the wonderful things
we're talking about.
I will. So one is actually a semi-serious question, because we all do have to face our fears in this, especially at this time, but we all have to face our fears throughout our life. We have to face our fears, and we have to just look it in the eye and say, yeah, I'm not comfortable with that, and then deal with it in some way. But on a lighter note, but semi-serious, do you have something that frightens you? Are you frightened of anything in particular and have had to deal with it?
I wouldn't say I'm extremely frightened or fearful of it, though I do kind of have a bit of, I don't know what another word for fear might be. I can't think off the top of my head for another synonym, but of lifts, but being stuck in a lift that is crowded.
Claustrophobia type thing.
Claustrophobia. So
uncomfortable.
The lift in particular is one of my places that I'm a bit frightened of.
Have you ever been stuck in a lift?
I get claustrophobic in the when I go to London. Not now, obviously.
Yeah.
Learning NLP and becoming an NLP practitioner, I was able to anchor my own relief triggers. So every time I go into London, I press my trigger, my anchor on my body, and I'm ready to go.
That's a technique and a half. I don't know what all that is about, but I must come and see you so you can explain it to me. But
absolutely.
So have you been stuck in a lift then? Or is it just...
Yeah. But you know what saved me?
Go on then.
It was on New Year's Eve that I got stuck in the lift, but there was a few of us, and but luckily I had a few bottles of champagne.
I knew you were going to say that.
So I was like, nobody's having that. It's my champagne.
I knew you said that. I felt we were going there or somewhere like it. So that relaxed you.
That relaxed me. I think that's probably what started my drinking.
So that's not the technique you use when you go into London, is it? I'll have a bottle of champagne before I go. That's not your pressure point or your anchor or whatever it is you said.
No, that's not my pressure point. No. Okay. I do the drinking once I'm in London.
I can understand that though. I think a few people do have that. That fear. I don't know that I do have that fear, but I did watch a program once where it was a film, a fictitious thing, but some boy had fallen down a well or something, and they were trying to dig a tunnel alongside it to get down to him. And in order to get to him quicker and quicker, the tunnel got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And they could only just wiggle in and wiggle backwards, and they couldn't turn around. And I watched and I thought, no, I don't like that. And having had that conversation with my partner, Colin, who is my consort, he's a ex-fireman. He said, yeah, small spaces. He's not good with those. He can do it. He's saving a life. He can do it, but no, not comfortable. So yeah, I think you're not alone with that one. Not alone.
That takes a lot of mental capacity as well, because if you're frightened, but then that's his job, how you switch.
He just goes into training mode and could do it. He's not a fireman anymore, but yeah. Another little one before we say goodbye is what advice would you now, people need to see a picture of you, and they will do on the podcast, because with all the things that you've done, you sound like a right old lady, yeah, but you're not. You're really young.
I am quite old.
You are not. You're really young and glamorous.
I'll tell you once we're off how old I am.
Okay, well, I want some of whatever you're taking. But at the age that you are now, if you were to give some advice to a 16-year-old you, or let's say, you know, a young lady you that is just finding out about the world and, you know, what they're going to do and where they're going to go and all those sorts of things, what bit of advice would you now, Zeenat, give the Zeenat at 16?
Wow, that's a big one. That's a huge one. I would say, don't worry about the way you look, fitting in peer groups, wanting to be popular. All of that will come as and when it grows. What's really important is for me, this is the way, I mean, I look out how I was, is growth. Just explore, go see the world, and let those experiences, I suppose, mold, nurture you into who you want to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all, everything else that you're seeing, all these digital devices, all these social media, that's not healthy. And unless you learn at a very age to control that, great. If you don't, then, you know, you've got all the time in the world to worry about, you know, the way you look, the weight you want. Just be healthy, mind and body, and not to the extreme.
I love that. So be true to yourself. You know, I was talking to one of my first, actually, podcast interview was with Nikki from Life in Orpington magazine.
Because
they outed the fact I was going to do the podcasts slightly earlier than they should do. So I said, right.
Brilliant.
I said, that's it. You're on. You're first. So she was lovely. She came on and I asked her the same question and her answer is very similar. Very similar. So slight different nuances, but very similar. Be true to yourself. Stop worrying about the outside world and all the influences if you can. Of course, very difficult for them to do and easy for us to say. But be true to yourself and grow as yourself. And then it will come to you. They will come to you. I don't know if you went quite that far, but that's what I'm saying now. And experience life, know who you are, and then the people that you want to be with will automatically come
be
to
attracted.
You. The law of attraction.
You'll attract the right energy and the right friends. Yeah. And I think I just want to add on that, and don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah.
If you're struggling, or even if you just want to get a little bit sort of a decision made, talk to somebody. There's always someone to talk to. There always is. You just need to kind of look. And, you know, somebody had actually, who was it? Somebody said to me, I think it was on one of my guests on the radio. They said, you know, on your list, on a post-it note, have five people, if you can, that you would call in a moment of crisis or worry so that it's there and you know you can call on them and have that visually.
Yeah, no, that's a very good idea. And you've just touched on it, because we haven't touched on it yet, is that you're on the radio. I love that. And I'm going to come on your radio show. So you've come on my podcast and I'm coming on your radio show.
Yes,
and
you
it's
are.
Channel,
I'm so delighted.
Channel 2, isn't it? Channel 2?
It is.
Go on, give it a plug.
Channelradio.co.uk/2, and it's called The Mindset Matters.
Lovely.
So exploring mental health and wellbeing horizons.
Super. Well, when we put this podcast up, I will make sure that I put that on the blurb that we describe the podcast. And I just want to thank you so much for being so open, honest and easy to chat to. There's so much I actually want to know. I'm sure lots of people other people want to know. So we'll make sure that your contact details are up there. And if people do want to come and see you and have a confidential chat and find out if you can help, I'm sure that your door is open and that you'll
absolutely.
Be very willing. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, Madam Mayor, it's been an absolute delight. Sorry, I called you Madam Mayor again. You told me not to.
No, we don't need any of that. No,
we don't need the voice.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure coming on your podcast.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I really do hope that people that do need a little bit of help here and there are confident enough, know enough about you. You've come across, you are such a natural, kind person. And you've come across that way, and I'm sure people will get in contact if they need to. But thank you for your top tips. It's all right not to be all right.
Yes.
I've got
it's okay not to be okay.
It's okay not to be okay.
Be okay.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely.
I changed it slightly. But anyway, we're there. I've got it. I've got the principle of it anyway. Thank you so much, Zina. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. That was the first in the series. If you know someone or are someone who should join me, please get in touch. Meanwhile, believe in yourself, support others, and please stay safe.